Good morning. Hi, folks. I'm glad to see all of you here. My name is Aran Dvir, and I'm very excited. Yes, this is my very excited face. I'm very excited to be here today to talk to you about Azure Active Directory Premium and to go into a little more depth than we might have in other sessions. Just to get started, to give you background, if you didn't have a chance to go to Nasos' session or Andreas' session, sessions earlier about Azure Active Directory, I'll start with a brief explanation of what it is. And I'll start actually a few years back when we at Microsoft started building our online services, you know, with Office 365 initially and then others. We realized that in order to provide customers with the functionality that they need, we'll need to build a common identity backend to all of these services. After going out and talking to our customers, we discovered that they have a similar problem with other SaaS applications. They can't really sort them. It's expensive to federate and synchronize identities with all of them. And so we decided to take the directory we built internally and expose it, well, to all of you as Azure Active Directory. So Azure Active Directory is a comprehensive identity management system that will provide you with a single identity namespace, a single identity for all your cloud applications. And as Nasos mentioned yesterday, it will now also extend to your on-premises applications. And so during this session, I will go into some detail about it. I just said all of this, so we can move on. Now, before I dive in, Azure Active Directory comes in three flavors, chocolate, vanilla, and something else. Specifically, there is a free version that is always there for you. You can activate it with your Azure subscription. It's always on with your Office 365 subscription or Intune. And that one, it contains a lot of nice things. But if you really, really want the depth of functionality, that self-service column that showed up in the middle on the previous slide, or connectivity to on-premises application, or the efficiency to manage identity and access at enterprise scale, you're going to want to move up in the tiers to Azure Active Directory Basic, which will be focused on your cloud-only users, and finally to Azure Active Directory Premium, which really provides the full suite of identity capabilities that you would expect out of any identity and access management system on-premises or in the cloud. For the rest of the session today, I'll be focusing on Azure Active Directory Premium. So I won't take the time to tell you this is only on Premium or this is in Basic. Assume it's all in Premium. Now, to jump into my session, I wanted to start with a quick demo. To do that, I wanted to introduce you to a new company we formed. It's called Tailspin. How many of you here have run into Tailspin before in one Microsoft demo or another? Yeah, we're not very creative with those things. We'll try to cycle a few more. Tailspin is a toy company. They recently started moving to the cloud. They're using Office 365, of course. They're also using Salesforce, and they recently moved their HR to Workday. They were very excited about Workday's integration with Azure AD, and I'll show you that during the session. They also have some on-premises applications that they've been running for a while, and they just don't want to move anywhere. They really want to end of life them eventually. And of course, like many other companies, they're using Twitter and Facebook for marketing work. I'd also like to introduce you to a couple of characters that you'll just run into during the sessions. So the first one is Drew Fogarty, and she's a director of marketing. She's the responsible one. She's the one that carries the burden of making sure that only the right people have access to those sensitive marketing materials at the right time. And so she has a hard life. Melvin is a team lead, and Irwin is going to be a new hire. So we're going to start today with Irwin McKay, who is just about to start work. So, Irwin has been communicating with HR at Tailspin for a while, and you know, they interviewed him, negotiated salary, and all the nice stuff, and eventually they set on a hire date. And then, a couple of days before his start date, he got an email into his personal account, says, welcome aboard, and it really gives him a couple of quick instructions. You know, when you come in on your first day, there is a kiosk in the lobby. You can use it to activate your account, and then once your account is active, you can go ahead and access all your stuff. So let's see. Erin clicks on the email. Now you'll notice this says reset your password, because effectively account activation is taking an unknown password and turning it into a known one. And so Erwin, who's never been connected to any of these systems before, will now try to activate his account. Yeah, I never get these right. I think this thinks I'm actually a bot. That will do that. Thank you. Who was it? Okay, now, this is really cool because Erwin has never interacted with these systems before, and yet all of this information exists about him. I'll scroll down in a second, but, well, you saw he got the email from HR. Well, obviously, I mean, he's been in contact with HR. They know who he is. They've been communicating with him over his personal account. They also collected his mobile phone number and his home phone number before he joined the company. As it turns out, the company has already issued him an office phone number. Now, that one he doesn't really have an access to right now, but we'll try to correct that in a few minutes. So Erwin takes a look and says, oh, yeah, I think I know a phone number that ends with 64. Let me try that. So in a second, I'll get a text message here. And it says 971210. Let's make sure I'm typing this one. And you can see Erwin can now set a password for himself. So nobody needed to collect a password, print it out, meet him at the lobby, say, hey, this is your password. Don't give it to anyone and find somewhere to change it quickly before, you know, something happens. And so we'll give Erwin a new password, something that I can remember. Okay, and now he remembers in the email a second ago there was also some instructions. You can go to myapps.microsoft.com, and it had a nice forward slash for his company name, so he jumped right in here, and you can see, oh yeah, I work for Tailspin. I think I know the password now. Let's see, Erwin. Bear with me for 1 second, I apologize. Well, I just want to actually log in with him because the rest of the demo will depend on that. No, I didn't forget the password. I think I'm just typing in the username incorrectly. I apologize for the delay here. Okay, we'll try to reset the password again. Yeah, it's a username. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your assistance here. I really do appreciate it. I could swear this is what I typed before to log in. Well, despite the technical difficulties, Aaron McRae finally got into his My Apps, and it's loading. Let's bear with it for a second. And the really cool thing is, you just saw, I just activated this account. It's so fresh, I actually didn't remember the account name correctly. Okay, it's legitimately just been created this morning automatically. And so I just logged into this account for the first time, and yet my Outlook is ready. I see this Tailspin sales app. And Salesforce, wow, that's cool. So I can start playing with my applications. And of course, the first thing I'm going to do is go into my email because, well, let's be serious. So I'm clicking on that tile, logging into my email. It does a couple of handoff redirects. And, oh, it doesn't even land on my inbox because this is a brand new Office 365 account. So I need to select my time zone. By the way, this is a configuration we expect people to be able to do for themselves. Then again, we expect them to be able to type their own username, so I can't really comment. Great. Just logged into my account for the first time. I see a couple of emails in the inbox. This is really good stuff. I see a lunch one-on-one with Melvin. He's my boss, so I might as well go ahead and accept that. And then an email from him. Happy to see you, starting today. Take your time settling down. Please go ahead and request. Oh, he wants me to request access to a Twitter account. Let's see how that works. Clicking on that link, so I see access to Tailspin Online Twitter. Join group. That's simple enough. Even I can do it. Okay, our request has been sent. I'm hoping the right things are going to go from there. Now that I saw the emails from my boss, he told me to settle in, so let's see what else I have in my applications tab here. Way too many password reset attempts. We looked at the, oh, let's look at this Salesforce thing. I'm an experienced employee, so I know already what Salesforce is. It's working. While it's doing that, I'll take a look at this other application. I must need it if it's here. Oh, and look, I'm logged into my Salesforce, and this is, I don't know if you can see it, but this is my personal Salesforce account. This is important because I'd like to explain a little bit about that in a few minutes. And then the sales tracking application is taking some time. But really, I think you got the gist. My first day at work, here you go. Oh, and this is, as it turns out, an on-premises application. I'll explain a little bit more about that, too. So you've seen me just now show up to work for the first time, get an email to my personal account, be able to securely activate my work account off of that, and then all my applications were there and ready. My boss already gave me instructions, which is really bumming me, but I was able to at least, you know, do what he said, and I can move on with my life. So hopefully we can go back to the presentation now and stop trying to reset passwords. So how does all of this work for the next, let's see, 60 minutes roughly? I'm going to try to explain to you how I set up this Azure AD premium tenant. It's not really a premium tenant, this Azure AD tenant, in order to be able to do all of this. I'll be covering applications, password management, access management, and reports. Now, reports, I didn't really show you anything on the end user. It's not really his domain. But I'm sure that you're going to want to see them from an administrator perspective. So diving in, starting with applications. The way I'm going to run this, I'm just giving you a heads up, is I'll go through a section, applications, then passwords, etc., and then run a short demo afterwards. And I'm hoping that the explanation and the demo together will give you the information that you need to go home later and do it on your own. There are a couple of types of applications that we have in Azure Active Directory. They're pre-integrated applications. And these are applications that are available on the gallery page outside on Microsoft Azure, as well as within Azure Active Directory when you click on Add a Pre-Integrated Application. Print-integrated application could have been integrated by Microsoft. In fact, many of them were, because we wanted to make sure that your customers have access to your most important applications. We also take requests on that, and you will find a link on that on the Microsoft Azure page to be able to request an application if you don't see it there. But some of these applications have already been integrated by our partners and other third parties. And I'll be explaining that very briefly in the session today. Now, applications that have been pre-integrated exist in two main flavors. They could have some provisioning settings, and they could have single sign-on settings, or both. Provisioning really means, is there an automatic way to take accounts from Azure Active Directory and put them in the target application, or the other way around, to take accounts from the target application and use that to populate Azure Active Directory. Single sign-on comes in three major types: federated. Really federated where it's supported by the service provider. A lot of the applications that we expose don't have federation support, and so we couldn't expose that to you. The second one is password single sign-on. And this is a password vaulting and the replay mechanism that stores the password securely in Azure Active Directory. And finally, there is existing authentication. And existing authentication is important because most of you have already got some SaaS applications. And as you move into Azure Active Directory, you might not want to divest where you already made an effort to federate with an existing application. And so you can just add that application to the access panel and utilize your existing single sign-on mechanism. The next category of applications are add your own applications, and these come in two varieties, really cloud-ready applications or cloud applications which are implemented against Azure Active Directory, use it explicitly for single sign-on, and can access the identity information or other application information in Azure through RESTful interfaces. And the last one is on-premises applications like the one I showed you earlier, where I have a website or some web application running on-premises, and I would like to make that available also to my employees coming in through Azure AD. Interesting. So with that, I'll jump straight into the meat of things. I mentioned provisioning, and so provisioning can go one of two ways. It can come in from other applications, or specifically with Azure Active Directory. In addition to connecting the directory to your on-premises AD or other directories on-premises, you can now integrate your Azure AD with Workday. Now, Workday is a very common HR SaaS application, and so once you integrate Azure AD with Workday, employees, as they become workers, that's Workday lingo, and then get Workday accounts, will flow into Azure AD and get Azure AD accounts they can log into. That's actually how the Irwin McRae account got created. That's probably why I didn't have the muscle memory to type in the username, because I had HR create the account and it flowed in and got activated automatically. This also means that if somebody loses their position, unfortunately, their account in AD will appropriately get disabled. But we don't only provision user accounts. We also provision groups off of Workday provisioning groups and group membership from these groups. And this is very important because this way you will be able to drive assignment to applications directly off of the HR hiring process. In effect, with Workday inbound provisioning, you can now delegate some common application assignment and account creation to the appropriate folks that make hiring and firing decisions in your organization. I have on the right here a couple of green boxes, and these are the technical details. The way we map accounts, the way we generate accounts in AD from Workday is based on the Workday user ID. Sorry. And in the group's case, it's based on the group name. If an account already exists in Azure AD, those accounts will be joined. And so if you've had Workday working independently for a while and you provisioned your Azure AD from your AD on-premises, the account in Azure AD and the account in Workday will join, and in the future, if that employee gets terminated, they will lose access to their account. The benefit of the groups, of course, is if HR, for example, moves me now between marketing and sales, then applications that are specific to the sales organization will show up, and those that are specific to the marketing organization will disappear from my access panel. Sorry, the synchronization is ongoing and can be run on a regular basis. Provisioning order is groups, users, and group membership. And the reason we provision in that order is to make sure that the user is provisioned by the time we want to add them to a group. I left this in the deck, and this is mostly as a reference. These are the general set of attributes that we flow from Workday into Azure AD. And you can really see, we make sure that your Azure AD account is fully populated with your office address, your home address, mobile phone number. These are the things I use to do my password reset at the beginning. Okay, the next class of provisioning applications are outbound provisioning, and we have a few more of those. And with outbound provisioning applications, the accounts in the application themselves are driven. They're created by Azure Active Directory. That means that if a user is assigned to an application, for example, Salesforce, and they're assigned either directly or through a group, then an account for that user using the Azure Active Directory account information is then created in the Salesforce subscription for this company. When I assign a user to Salesforce, I also need to select a profile. Right? Salesforce requires profiles as their RBAC system. And so when you connect Azure Active Directory to Salesforce, we retrieve the profiles that were configured in there for the specific subscription. And when you assign the user to Salesforce, you can select which profile you want to assign. If you switch a user's profile, we change that information on their account in Salesforce. If a user is subsequently terminated in Workday, we disable their account in AD, but we also disable their account in Salesforce. And this way, we make sure that even if Salesforce itself lets you log in through other means when you're federated, that user is effectively losing access to their account. On all of these features, we also have extensive reports. And as I mentioned earlier, I'll show those in one of the later demos. And so I did the same thing. I wanted to give you in the deck a reference to the attributes we flow. But you'll see in a few minutes, one of the features that is coming is a way to actually add to these flows on Salesforce. The next one is shared accounts. And shared accounts is really a fun feature. Most companies use consumer applications like Facebook and Twitter to do some of their work. And these become very sensitive accounts. I believe everybody here has heard about cases where an employee got fired and still had access to the Twitter account. This really happens because there is no good way to protect that account. You say, okay, I'll give it to my two trusted people. In our case, it's Drew and Melvin. And I trust them to store it because they're responsible individuals. But then when Drew is on vacation, somebody really needs to tweet something, she's going to give them the username and password, and effectively you've lost control. With Azure Active Directory, you can assign username and passwords to individuals for corporate accounts, but you can also assign them to groups and make sure that they're shared among all members of the groups. The users themselves don't have access to the password in the clear. Right? The password is retrieved from Azure Active Directory and plumbed into the application when they access it through the access panel. Users can have access to more than one shared account. And I'll be showing you that in a couple of seconds. The next type of application is applications that come in from on-premises. You saw one example for this, and I believe there was a deep session on this yesterday. I hope all of you had a chance to attend. This is one of the coolest features of Azure Active Directory because everybody has something that they can't move from on-premises. It's going to be there until it dies. Right? And it's always been a hassle. It's an unprotected web server, I can't really move it out, and even if I could, the negotiation with security about putting it in the DMZ or poking a hole through the firewall, that will never get done. But with Azure Active Directory, you can very easily use a connector on-premises to publish your application out. And the nice thing is that you don't get inbound traffic. Users get authenticated when they access Azure Active Directory. They're effectively pre-authenticated when they access the cloud proxy that then calls down to the agent and says, get me this page from the application. Okay? And so you can now securely and easily publish applications from on-prem, and you can again get all the benefits of Azure Active Directory from the reports to the access control to the single sign-on for your end users. Quickly about concepts in application assignments. Applications can be assigned directly or through a group. When assigned directly, that user has an application until you remove it. If you assign them through a group, the group assignment mechanism continues to update. And so as long as you're a member of the group, you will have access to the application. If you're removed or if you remove yourself from the group through self-service group management, you will lose access to that application appropriately. Where applications use provisioning in roles, your role is going to be determined in priority order by the group or by the direct assignment. Vice versa. First of all, by a direct assignment, and then if one doesn't exist, then by group assignment. Assignment options include the application role, as I mentioned, the SKU or license, depending on the application type, and finally, they could include a username and password in the case of password single sign-on applications. We also have license management, and we really decided to bucket this up here with the rest of the applications because you really need a consistent story. You saw that when Irwin logged into his environment for the first time, he was able to do password reset, and then he had the groups tab and the approvals tab, which are premium features of Azure Active Directory. All of this is because Irwin was provisioned as a member of a group from Workday, and that group is assigned an Enterprise Mobility Suite license. And so he automatically gets access to rights management, Azure AD Premium, and Intune for device management. Today we support the following licenses through that mechanism. Okay, let's go back to the computer. And this time we'll go into the administrator because we want to walk through the configuration of all of these elements. Now, over the past few days, I've been hearing that people get sometimes confused about what they see when they log into their Azure portal. And so I wanted to spend 1 second, really a quick comment, on what you're seeing here, and then I'll jump into the Azure Active Directory Premium configuration. The Azure portal loads in context of your Azure subscriptions. If you've used Azure before, you know you can manage these, you can manage which subscriptions you're seeing here. And really what it does is it loads all of the subscriptions that you are an administrator or co-administrator of in context of the namespace you logged in on. So in this case, I logged in the context of Wingtip Toys Online, which as it turns out is a subsidiary of Tailspin. But I really want to be dealing with Tailspin here, so I'll switch my subscription namespace quickly. And the Azure portal will load again, but this time in the context of my subscriptions on the Tailspin namespace. Now, all of this exercise is completely irrelevant for my goal today because the difference between Azure Active Directory and the rest of Azure is Azure Active Directory is a license-based service. And so it does not come up in context of your Azure subscription, which is a pay-as-you-go mechanism, but rather in context of your identity. So when I go into the Azure Active Directory tab down here, you will see that regardless of the fact that I had subscriptions both in Wingtip Toys and in Tailspin, I can personally only see a Tailspin directory. The reason is because I don't exist as a user in the Wingtip Toys directory. If you were to add me, if a Wingtip Toys administrator was to add me as a user in that directory, then both directories would show up here. And really, Azure AD, regardless of which Azure subscription you log into, will always load in context and show all of the directories that you are a member of. It will also tell you what kind of permissions you have in those directories. You can see, in this case, I'm a global administrator, which makes me really happy because I get to play with everybody's lives. Okay, going into the directory, quick start is always a nice place to pause because this is one of the mechanisms we use to give you news about what's coming and what's new. You will see here my users list, and you will see that my admin is tailspinonline.onmicrosoft.com. I created that when I created my tenant. The rest of these accounts I really wouldn't have had the patience to do all of them, actually came in from Workday. They came in from a fully populated organization in Workday HR system. Groups are a mix of groups that came in from Workday and groups that I've created here for my own purposes. So for example, marketing team comes in from Workday, while access to Tailspin Twitter is a local group to Azure AD. And then my application, this is where I'll spend most of the coming demo. So you can see I have my Office 365 here. Tailspin sales tracking is that on-premises application you saw. I have my Salesforce and Twitter and Workday. Starting with Workday, this is where we started the explanation. I want to show you really quickly that what I configured here was user import from Workday. And this is very easy. For anyone here who's ever set up something like FIM or MIM synchronization engine on premises, you know how difficult it is. You have to come up with all the rules, find the right connectors, make sure that they can authenticate to the target system, they have access to the target systems. Then you have to be able to map all the attributes and compute the correct attribute values between the two systems. And this is really complicated. And then if HR decides that they want to add a value or change the way they treat one of the values, now you have to redo almost the whole thing every time. And so with Azure Active Directory, we've done all of this for you. All you really have to do is provide us with your subscription information and permissions to read from that subscription in Workday. We validate that you provided us with legitimate credentials, because we don't want you to think that it's configured but failing. And once we see all of that is good, the only thing you really need to decide is how often do you want to check for new users? Azure Active Directory integration with Workday is this easy. It will take you 5 minutes to set up, and you'd have your accounts flowing from Workday. I also, by the way, get the option not to start the provisioning, but who would do that? Okay, closing that. 1 second. I now want to go into Salesforce really quickly. And do you remember when Irwin logged into his My Apps, he had a Salesforce account, and that Salesforce account was unique to his name. The reason all of that existed is because Irwin is assigned to Salesforce. Now, nobody actually went in and assigned Irwin to Salesforce. That would require knowing who Irwin is, and I don't. Right? I work in IT, and he's just been hired, so even if I'll get to know him over time, it's not yet. But you can see here that there is this marketing group that Drew Fogarty is an owner of. She's the director, so she's legitimately an owner. And this marketing group is assigned to Salesforce. Now, I can change its assignment. Right now, it's assigned as a cheddar free. I could say, actually, we want to upgrade our subscription. I would actually need to go in and upgrade my subscription in Salesforce. And I want to switch it from cheddar free user to marketing user. By doing that now, we will provision a change on all the accounts that are for all the users that are a member of this marketing group, and make sure that from now on, they have the marketing user profile in Salesforce. I won't do that because I don't have licenses in Salesforce in order to do it. I apologize. Now, from a configuration perspective, again, configuring Salesforce for provisioning is just as simple as configuring Workday for inbound provisioning. You really only have to provide us with account information, and the rest is done for you. In this case, I'll show you it a little bit differently. I won't actually provision another Salesforce account, but I want to show you that I can. We discovered that a lot of organizations, because of the organic nature of SaaS application adoption, a lot of organizations end up having two or three Salesforce subscriptions. And so we want to let you be able to manage all of them as you collect them from your employees. And so despite the fact that I already have Salesforce integrated here, too many applications, I can add it once more. I just need to provide a new name. So this new name is going to be my sales department, Salesforce, because they were difficult and created their own. And now I can go through and configure this instance of Salesforce completely independently of the other one. They coexist in my Azure AD. My Azure AD drives accounts into both of them. And so configuring single sign-on is very easy. You select, you would usually with an application like Salesforce select federated or Azure Active Directory-based single sign-on. You'll need to provide your Salesforce tenant, your subscription URL. And this is where I'm going to get stuck now because I don't have another one. Then the next page is just a list of instructions. Download the certificate and copy these three fields into the following fields in your Salesforce setup console. And at that point, you're done. I can show you I've populated these on the other Salesforce application I created. Configure user provisioning, as I mentioned, is the same two-step process. Tell us about your Salesforce subscriptions and give us a permission to act in them. Going into the application from on-prem, you'll see I've already enabled my application proxy, so I'm good there. All I really had to do here is provide Microsoft with my internal application URL, the one I want to publish, and choose how I want people to pre-authenticate into the application. Again, once I've done all of that, the next step is just to assign users and groups. And that's not going to work out for me today. It's just to assign users and groups, and the access to the application is determined once more by who is assigned to it. Finally, Office 365, and this is very exciting because with Azure Active Directory Premium, we can now manage your Office 365 licenses through groups. So again, you saw when Irwin logged into his computer, I'll say it about 10 more times during the session. When Irwin logged into his computer for the first time, he had his Outlook all provisioned. Now, he had it all provisioned despite the fact that it's a brand new account. And all of this worked out because when Workday created his account in Azure AD, we assigned an Office 365 license to him because he's a part of the marketing group, and marketing gets Office 365 E3 licenses. And so you can see here, I can choose to assign users. And I always prefer to assign groups because managing users independently is really, really annoying. And you can see there are exactly two groups that are assigned here. One of them is the IT administrators because we deserve Office too. And the other one is marketing. And now members of both groups get Office automatically, and these groups are managed by Workday. Cool. The last thing I did was I assigned Enterprise Mobility Suite licenses. I'll show you Active Directory Premium because I clicked into here, and I want to show you. In this case, my administrator account. This is actually the account I'm logged in with right now. You can see it's assigned Active Directory Premium. I actually didn't give EMS to myself because, as an administrator, I don't really merit device management and rights management, and I'm trying to be conservative with the company's resources. But I do need premium because I want access to those reports and I want the ability to manage through groups. So you can see I assigned the administrators group. You can see it in parentheses here. I assigned the administrators group the Azure Active Directory Premium license, and my user inherits that license through administrators. Great. So now since I've shown you everything that I've done, I'll do what everybody else does and go into my email. We're done here, right? So we said administrators get email too. Let's see it loading. And the downside of administrators getting email too is that other people can contact us. And I see that I have an email here from Drew Fogarty who's telling me, she's the marketing director, that she needs yet another Twitter account configured and she still wants to control access to this one as well. So she asked me to add it. And it's the usual stuff. It's just this is the account name. So let me go and do this for her really quickly before we move on with the day. Going back into applications, I can now go into Twitter. I see she, like she said in the email, she's already assigned, she already created a group for this purpose. She's actually had a group internally she's been using to communicate about the new toy that we're making. And so marketing a new product. And so now she just wants me to add this new Twitter account to this. So, well, I can do that, no problem. Here I want to assign it. I won't tell you the password. It's a really hard one. And I'll cross my fingers. I hope that her new Twitter account actually works as she said, and she'll just be able to access that account. She'll also be able to assign other people to access it, and we'll deal with that in a couple of minutes. So that was really the administrator side. And now we can move back to the presentation and continue talking. And let's go a little bit into password management. Password management is very important. It's what drives authentication, what drives your identity. And so from a password management perspective, Azure Active Directory Premium includes extensive capabilities, both on the administrator side and on the end user side. We support, obviously, password change, but we also support self-service password reset. And we support both of, and we support, of course, administrator password reset. We support all of these, not just against Azure Active Directory, but also against your Active Directory on-premises. And so if you're doing a federated authentication or a password-based single sign-on, then you can still benefit from both from the end-user experience in self-service password change, self-service password reset, as well as from the administrator's console, letting your password administrators or help desk administrator be able to reset those passwords to on-premises. With that on-premises mechanism, we also support distribution to other applications using FIM or MIM password synchronization. So as long as you have your AD as the password master, you can reset your password in the cloud and it will get down to your SAP server. Oh, sorry. We, of course, support password complexity in the and we do this appropriately for the type of user. So in the case of a user that comes from Azure AD, password complexity is governed in Azure AD, and I'll be showing you a couple of commandlets for how to play with that in a second. In the case of password complexity in Windows Server AD, or for users that authenticate with Windows Server AD, again, those federated or password single sign-on users, password complexity for password reset and password change is determined by your on-premises Active Directory. So if I go through and try to reset my password, and I've hit one of those in the last five, and your password history requirements are five, Windows Server AD is going to tell our password reset mechanism, I cannot accept that password. We'll pass that information on to the user. They'll be able to provide a new one and carry on with their lives. And the experience on all of the self-service experiences is customized. These are the Azure AD password complexity and password management commandlets. They are part of the MS Online library and allow you to reset a user's password, set password complexity requirements, set password expiry requirements, etc. On password reset specifically, administration goes a little deeper. You can now select which gates and how many gates are required for your users. In the case of my demo company, as I'll show you in a second, I allow them to use all gates, and I only require one. But in some cases, you may have higher security requirements, and you may want a combination of two factors in order to change your password. I also have a lot of control over registration. I can do registration as I've done in this demo, automatically driving it in from Workday or automatically synchronizing it from Active Directory on-premises. I can also do registration by forcing users to register their password reset information when they log into the access panel. Finally, I wanted to mention that the mobile phone number we use is stored privately. It's not actually exposed on the GAL or on the Exchange Global Address List. And this is on purpose because otherwise users might feel uncomfortable registering their personal mobile phone number for password reset purposes. Finally, we support attestation. That means you can now tell the user it's not bad enough that you had to register that password reset information once. You have to go back and revisit it. Just tell me that it didn't change every 6 months. Okay? But from your perspective, this makes sure that you will no longer be getting those password reset calls to your help desk. Okay, we have extensive notification capabilities. And the primary use here from an administrator perspective is, of course, to pre-register users to avoid those help desk self-service, those help desk password reset requirements. From an end user perspective, end users use password reset when they forget their account, when they're blocked by an administrator, or when they need to activate their account for the first time. Their experience, as you've seen, is fully company branded. And finally, they can also change their password through their myapps.microsoft.com application. So how does the password write back to on-premises work? Because this is, again, one of those really tricky situations. Do I need to put something on the DMZ? Do I need to expose my ID? Well, the answer is no. Once you finish installing your Azure AD Connect or Azure AD Sync, it registers, and you choose to enable password writeback, it registers itself with Azure Active Directory and creates a private service bus instance. And from that point on, it just sits there waiting. It sits there waiting until a user comes in or an administrator comes in and says, I want to change my password, or I want to change this user's password. At that point, the service checks, well, is this a user in Azure Active Directory or is authentication driven from on-prem? We don't want the user to need to make decisions here, and we don't want the administrator to need to configure anything. If password writeback is enabled, you need to reset your password where it exists. And so this one is an on-premises user. The user enters their new password, and of course, as it always happens, at least for us at Microsoft, the password does not meet the complexity requirements. You have to go like 5 times before they actually take it. So we informed the user in very friendly language that unfortunately, in this case, the password didn't meet the history requirements, which is the most annoying one. And you have to go again. The user submits a new password. And this time, we're all good. The password is set to on-premises. If you're using password hash sync, the password is then synchronized back into Azure Active Directory. Or the password hash is then rehashed and synchronized into Azure Active Directory. And so you can now see single sign-on or single sign-on like with your new password everywhere you go. Success. Finally, if you do use FIM or MIM to distribute passwords to on-premises application, once the password is set to your AD, that takes over and pushes it to those applications. So even if you have to go into an old on-premises application that uses its old passwords, you can still have a single sign-on like experience everywhere. Okay, let's quickly set up SSPR. We'll go back into our administrator here. And in this case, I want to go into the configure tab. And again, how many of you have ever set up self-service password reset with something like Forefront Identity Manager? Yeah, not easy, right? What about putting it out there on the internet securely? Piece of cake. Excellent. That's what we like to hear. This will be even easier. In order to activate self-service password reset, all I have to do is toggle from no users to all users. I'm done. Now, I get a few choices, though, so I can, you know, make my life more interesting. I get to choose which authentication gates I want to expose to the users. And these are really options for them. As you've seen when I came in with Erwin McCray, I got to choose from those pieces of information that I had registered. And this is so if I forgot my cell phone at home today, I can use my alternate email account if I registered it. We also will very soon have for everybody the notion of a password reset through question and answer. And we give you a lot of flexibility here, including how many questions you want answered, out of how many potential, what kind of questions, what are acceptable answer parameters. For example, the answer, the word that you provide as an answer does not show up in the question, which is always nice to secure. But I have more options. I can choose whether I want to force people to register, and I can choose whether I want to force people to reattest for the registration information on a regular basis. And finally, I can choose, I can choose how I want people to be notified about it. When I reset my password, do I want to notify myself, my manager, or my IT? And this is very important, because if I didn't reset my password, I'd like to see that email saying, you've just reset your password, so I can get really concerned. Finally, and since I'm already here, let me go all the way down to group management. And because I have Enterprise Builder Suite and AD Premium, I can turn on self-service group management. But in this case, I actually want to try something new. I've let every user manage their groups, but now I want to shift things around a little. So what I could do is actually choose that only some of the users in my directory can create and manage security groups. Well, now all of the users will be able to submit requests, but only some privileged users will be able to create and manage groups. And the users are defined by membership in the security group that is defined here. Okay, so that was really fun, and that was my password reset experience. We'll go back to the presentation and see where the day takes us. Delegated access management. You've seen that when Irwin came into his computer in the morning and his boss told him, get access to this thing, he went and said, join this group, and nothing happened. Really, nothing happened because now we're waiting on the person who is responsible to make that decision to make a call, whether they want to approve his request or not. So in delegated access management, we're splitting the responsibilities between the administrator, responsibility bearer, a delegate, and the end user. The end user will be responsible to making requests if they want to. The IT administrator is the one that manages the accounts for the company. And so as you've seen in my earlier demo, I added a new account for Drew Fogarty. I'm the one that controls that account. But once I give Drew Fogarty control over it, she can decide whether users can just add themselves without approval, whether nobody can see the group at all, or if she needs to approve any access request to that credential. So let's go into this Drew Fogarty character that's been giving me instructions all morning. Oh, session timed out. Well, now you know Drew's password. But at least I can copy-paste. But I'm not so worried that you know Drew's password. Because she's managing access to applications, I don't want just anyone to be able to log in here. So Drew is protected by a two-factor requirement. You've seen Irwin is not because, well, he can do whatever he wants. But Drew is a person of responsibility. And so before you've seen me use text messages, now I got my access request to my phone factor phone application. And I do this because it's a cool application. It's much more convenient than typing in the password request. It's much more convenient than typing in that PIN, which you've seen I'm not very good at. But also because this way I don't get confused between the accounts. So Drew always gets the phone application. And I logged into my Drew account, and this is great. Drew, by the way, has this nice Twitter access. Let's see what happens here. And remember, a few minutes ago, the administrator gave Drew access to a second Twitter account. And so now Drew needs to decide, do I want to go into the Tailspin Online Twitter account or the Tailspin Toy? Well, Drew asked for the Tailspin Toy, so she wants to confirm that it's all good and fine. She selects that one, gets redirected to Twitter. In the meantime, while that's loading, she always goes through and checks her email and approvals and stuff like that. Let's see what's going on. A lot of people want access to Twitter. Logan is in HR. She doesn't deserve access to Twitter. I don't know. She probably thought this was fun. So I want to deny that request. But here, Irwin, and I see Melvin was a little impatient this morning, so I'll approve their requests. Sorry, this has to be one of those days. Okay, and I'm here in Twitter. Cool. Now I can also go back into my group management mechanism, which I use to manage access. And I don't want to ask Irwin to go and ask for access for the new account. It's a pain. I can just go into the marketing a new product group right here. And since I'm the owner of the group, in addition to changing its name and making it something much neater, I can also directly add members or remove them. In this case, I'll want to add Irwin. And so when Irwin comes back to his computer in a few minutes, he'll also have two accounts for Twitter. And you can see now there are two members in this group. And so I can delegate access management to sensitive information to the right decision makers. And it's no longer call IT every 5 minutes, add a user here, add a user there. And on top of it, I now have full control, and the right people in the organization have full control over sensitive accounts like Twitter, Facebook, etc. So, back to our discussion. Reporting. All of this is brought together with comprehensive reports. Because this, when the system just works, you want to know what's going on. Now that you're not doing everything yourselves, you want to see what's happening here. And reports fall into really three buckets. The free reports, they are just rule-based, and they're relatively simple. Multiple login failures followed by a successful one. Some of them are a little bit more complicated. Impossible travel or travel between two locations, access from two locations with too short a time. Other reports, if you were at NASA session yesterday, utilize specialized data that Microsoft has an opportunity to bring in to integrate with your information in order to give you an edge. So Microsoft has a digital crimes unit, and that organization is very busy helping police the internet. It supports governments and other private, and participate in partners with other private organizations to bring out down viruses, malicious activity, botnets, etc. So we at Microsoft have access to that information and can bring it back to you. And I'll show you in our report in a few minutes how we can use that to show you when maybe one of your users logged in the past from a device that we suspect at the time had a bot on it. The next one is sign-ins from IP addresses with suspicious activity. So this is not like the top one, sign-in from unknown sources. That one's also tricky because you have to be able to correlate Tor addresses from around the world and map them to where users logged in from. This one is a little cuter. Here we can utilize the fact that there are about 2 billion authentications against Azure Active Directory on a weekly basis. And we can bring that to your benefit and tell you, well, from these 2 billion of authentications, we see that the authentications from these IP addresses have suspicious patterns. And so if your user ended up logging in from an IP address that showed suspicious pattern on your tenant or others, we can flag it for you and let you know that something there needs to be addressed. And finally, we're working on investments in machine learning, and one of the nicest reports we have is the irregular sign-in activity. And this one is very cool because unlike that impossible travel on the top, which says, well, if you logged in from Budapest and 5 minutes later from New York, this might be suspicious. Of course, as you all know, this could also be VPN. This one treats the data in your tenant and your behavior patterns, including which devices and IP addresses you log in from a regular basis, and whether 5 other people from your organization traveled to China and logged in from China this week. And it takes all that information together and identifies when something is odd with your behavior. And that really lets you now identify, you know, sort the wheat from the chaff. Identify those really, really tricky, sensitive points. All of this comes together into a single report that shows you the anomalous login activity, so you don't have to sort through multiple reports. And I'll show you how that plays together in a second. And it lets you take actions against it. And you can also download these reports and use Excel or some other software in order to format them and share them with other people. In addition to all of that, we have other operational reports. We provide you download or portal access to your tenant's audit activity, password reset, password change, application sign-ons, and application provisioning. All of this works by taking the data from multiple sources, including our own sources, Azure Active Directory and the user's activity against the Active Directory, as well as location information, information from and about SaaS applications, and information from external sources like the Digital Crimes Unit. We then analyze all this data and provide it through to you in various means. And so with that, I'll go into my last demo of the day. And going back to my administrator here, I'll go into the Reports tab. Oh, you can see all of these reports that I mentioned before, the anomalous activity, activity logs, and the integrated applications. And so I mentioned this report. This is where Chaya Basu logged in from Singapore and then from Bangkok. We estimate the travel time to be 2 hours. They've done it in 61 minutes, so they either went really, really, really fast, or they VPN'd, or they're two different people. Either way, we should at least be aware of it. If we decide, you know, we know they traveled today for business, or we often go to Singapore for customer meetings, you can always choose to ignore this event. I won't do that right now. I mentioned sign-in address from IP addresses with suspicious activity. This is where we bring to you the power of Azure Active Directory. We bring to you the value of those billions of authentications that happen against Azure Active Directory and let you benefit from that directly by showing you that, again, Chaya, this character is repeating himself. Again, Chaya logged in from an IP address where we've seen suspicious activity, where we've seen people try to steal accounts. Right? So maybe something here is getting wrong. I can continue down the list of reports, and I mentioned this one. This is the one that where we pull in information from the Digital Crimes Unit, and I'm happy to tell you that nobody in your organization logged in from devices that were possibly infected. Had they done that, you would see here an entry with the information about the device, the IP address it logged in from, the version of operating system on it, and what we suspect it was infected in, the time of concerned login, and the fact that the device was very likely infected at the time of login. Irregular sign-in activities, that really cool machine learning-based report that I mentioned, and luckily that same character doesn't show up here now. But this is the one that really tells you something here is odd for this individual in your organization. And finally, and this is, I think, the most important security report we have, because this brings all that information together. And what you start to see here is patterns. You can see that Edward Huntington signed in from an atypical location. Okay? So that happens. He might be at a conference this week. But these other three people, they have multiple infractions against them. Nikhil in particular has a lot of suspicious activity, and I don't know what's going on there, so I'm going to get concerned about this individual specifically. So now I can take direct actions from here. I can choose to enable multi-factor authentication for Nikhil. This makes sure that he can continue to be productive, right? But now I'm more confident that he's the one logging in, or I can take a little less aggressive action and just reset his password. Now, I know that everybody in my organization can reset their password. So I know that he's the only one who will be able to recover his password if I reset it. And so I can take actions right from here and make sure that the account is secure and the end user is still productive. Going into the other report, we have this lovely audit report that shows all administrative activity in your tenant. I won't wait for that. You should go and take a look at it. The password reset activity report shows you who participated in password reset. And you can see here my Irwin McKay. Now I can use this to show to keep me honest, right? You can see I've never reset Irwin McKay's password before our session this morning. So, but you can see which users reset their password. You can see which users are registered to reset their password. And this is a very important report because you want to know that your organization is healthy, that people are ready to go. Especially if you see suspicious activity and you want to use password reset as the mechanism to recover an account, you'll probably want to check that the user can recover their account. You can see group management activity, and I'll skip all of this. Application usage is very important. You'll see all of our accesses to the various applications today. So in this case, you can see the total sign-ins into an application as well as the number of individuals. You can see that only one individual has been signing into applications today. It's not surprising. And the last one that I want to show is account provisioning. And this one I wanted to spend some time on because now you can confirm that what I told you was true and all of those user accounts actually got provisioned off of Workday in the last 24 hours because I just connected my tenant to Workday in the last 24 hours in preparation for this demo. And so this was very convenient for me. I had a fully provisioned Workday account and I was able to set up this demo environment in a couple of hours. That's it. There are additional sessions on Azure Active Directory. Some of them have happened in the past, and I'm really sorry if you've missed them. Others will continue. I believe tomorrow we're talking about application security. Nasos? Tomorrow we're talking about application security. With that, are there any questions? I'll take no as a vote of confidence. Yes, sir.
In SSPR.
Oh, sorry, one second.
Oh. Yeah. In SSPR in Azure AD, is the mobile phone number a separate attribute from the mobile phone number?
Yes, I mentioned in passing during that part of the discussion, we store the self-service password reset registered mobile phone number in a hidden attribute to make sure that users don't expose their phone number unintentionally in the email system.
And the follow-up on that, can I automate the population of that one as well?
Through which means?
Like from?
Work in progress.
Workplace.
You've seen this from Workday, yes. I believe we're working on this from AD on premises. Other questions?
Hello. We saw when you accessed the Twitter, we saw the phone-based logon came on just very fast. So is the password injected in that? And if you use Fiddler or whatever on the client side, can you access the real password then?
Yes, the password in applications that don't support any type of federated logon solution, the password is injected into the logon form. And yes, if you know exactly what you're doing, you could probably fetch the password in the clear. But remember, you can't get access to that application if you haven't been assigned it. And the benefit of being able to assign it through a group means that if I remove you, I only need to go and change that password in one place. And even if you are able to retrieve it, I'm done. I no longer lose control over my credentials. And most end users don't know what you just said. But we're prepared even for that. Any other questions? One over there. Oh, and one in that. 2 seconds. I'll keep track.
Hi there. Yeah, I was just wondering about the reports that were just showing there, where you were showing who had registered for password reset.
Yeah, there were only two people.
I was going to say, yeah, but yeah. Is there a way that you could kind of reverse that report and show people who haven't? Because I'm not really bothered about the people who have. I'd like to know the people in my organization that haven't registered for the password reset.
I actually don't remember the answer to that. I have to take a look. But I don't believe that that's the case right now. I'll take a note on that. That's an interesting feature request. No, you cannot do that right now, but I will take a note. This is something we'll do in the future. Other questions? Yes, there was one right here and then one right there. I'm sorry to keep you running around. At least I get to stand here.
Can we use the multi-factor authentication with Windows with the phone function also in Europe? Is this not a problem?
Does yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely, I just did.
I saw it, yeah. But maybe you have an American phone, I don't know.
Oh, I actually do have an American phone. But a lot of our team, so we have team members here and in Israel. And actually at Microsoft at this point, we have an option. We can use our smart cards or phone factor. And so yes, this is a global solution. It works everywhere. Before that question, Nathos just informed me that he confirmed that it's also localized to Greek. I can tell you that it's localized to Hebrew. Andreas, do we have Swedish? We also have Swedish. You'll find that we support most of the languages. It's very likely that whatever tongue you speak is localized. Yes, sir.
If a customer is already using Office 365 and they have a DIR sync running with ADFS, what's the best way to start using Active Directory Premium?
I'm so glad you asked that question. If a customer already has Office 365 and they're all set up with the way they want to single sign-on and accounts provisioning from on-premises, they are already using Azure Active Directory. They just need to access the portal. Now, if they want to try Premium, all they need to do is activate a Premium trial from within the Azure Active Directory portal on their tenant. That will give them 100 licenses for 90 days to play around with this. Does that address your question? Anyone else? Folks, I'll be here all week.
Hello, I've just got a very quick question in terms of if you're using fine-grained password policies in your organization, does that replicate or does it, you know what I mean, if you've got individual password policies applied to users on-premise?
When we reset or change a password to on-premises, we do whatever Active Directory tells us to do. We pass the password to Active Directory and ask it, is this something that you're willing to accept? And based on its response, complete the action. And so any granularity of password policy that you've set on premises will apply.
I had an additional question.
Please.
The situation I was talking about was with a DIR sync without password hashing. Can you comment on that?
It's all the same. When you set up Azure Active Directory or Office 365, you can choose how you want to single sign-on experience, if at all. And whether you're using a federation or password hash sync, everything works the same. Azure Active Directory is the directory that drives, that powers Office 365. Other questions? If not, then I really appreciate your time and patience with this and your advice about when I'm not typing. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.